Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, October 10th, 2017. The main opposition candidate pulls out of Kenya's rerun of the elections.
Odinga and the NASA Coalition have been citing complaints with the Electoral Commission, ranging from the personnel on the commission. They have had problems with the computer servers, which they said were hacked. So they haven't been very happy with the Electoral Commission from the beginning.
And a backlash from South Sudanese civil society activists over the move to enforce national driver's licenses and registration plates.
On behalf of the public, are aggrieved by the conduct and the manner of implementation of the order, including and not limited to limited public information on the order, exorbitant penalties and charges for permit and cancellation of valid driving license.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In a surprise announcement today, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga has withdrawn from the October 26th rerun of the presidential election. Jill Craig says Odinga's withdrawal is a result of a series of complaints by Odinga's National Super Alliance Party about the Electoral Commission, which Odinga complains has not been streamlined to be consistent with the Constitution and the country's electoral laws.
For those who don't know, Kenya's had quite a bit of drama in its electoral season this year. Essentially, what happened was after the August 8th polls, the Supreme Court ruled on September 1st that the Electoral Commission had engaged in some illegalities and irregularities in the transmission of the election results and therefore nullified that election and told the Electoral Commission they would have 60 days to plan new polls. So what happened was the Electoral Commission planned some polls for, next week, and then they delayed that until October 26th. So until this press conference, we had all been expecting to have the next set of presidential elections on the 26th, but now we definitely got some startling news from Odinga that they would not be participating in those polls.
And do we know what the rationale is behind the withdrawal? I mean, what does Odinga want to happen as a result of his withdrawal?
Well, he's been pretty clear as to why he's withdrawn. Basically, so ever since the Supreme Court made the ruling, and to be honest and fair, before that ruling, in fact, even before the August 8th polls, Odinga and the NASA Coalition have been citing complaints with the Electoral Commission, ranging from the personnel on the commission. They have had problems with the computer servers, which they said were hacked. So they haven't been very happy with the Electoral Commission from the beginning. And they said that since the ruling was made, the commission has, quote, had no intention to streamline the Electoral Commission to accord with the Constitution and electoral laws. So that's their first issue. The second issue is with Kenyatta's Jubilee administration. There's been some tension in the last few weeks after the ruling administration sort of encouraged some amendments to electoral law to be introduced into the National Assembly. Those laws were not favorable to NASA, and they said they put in their statement today that they go against international best practice, that in the middle of an elections contest, one cannot change the rules and put in place rules that seek to favor him.
And this is all just happening weeks before the elections. What can we expect moving forward? What does this withdrawal mean for Election Day?
That's the question we are all rushing around right now trying to figure out. Right now, Kenyatta is speaking to a crowd. We're waiting to see what he says in response. The IEBC has just released a statement saying that they are going to be discussing with their legal team the proper way forward, given this announcement by NASA. So right now, everything is very, very much up in the air, and I think that people are very confused. If you talk to ordinary Kenyans, they're confused. They don't know what this means. And many of them just want their normal life back, whereas other people are very much in favor of what Odinga is doing, and they are, supporting him.
Has Kenya seen anything like this?
No. Kenya has never seen anything like this. And I would even go so far as to say that Africa has has not seen anything like this. I think one of the things that keeps being mentioned when you talk to people, in different areas of Kenya, is that the fact that the Supreme Court went against the incumbent president on September 1st, and they ruled against an incumbent sitting president in Africa, that in of itself was completely revolutionary. What happened next, though, has become a little bit murky insofar that the Constitution, what experts have told me is that the Constitution was not written when Kenyans put together a new constitution in 2010. The drafters of that constitution did not anticipate a situation such as this, where the Supreme Court would rule against the Electoral Commission, the body that is in charge of the elections. They did not anticipate that that particular body would be accused of, basically bungling the transmission of results. And so they gave, in the constitution, they said that 60 days would be enough to organize fresh polls. But on the ground and in reality, there have been too many skirmishes between, verbal skirmishes, of course, between the opposition and the ruling party. So it's been a very difficult trek even since September 1st.
That's VOA correspondent Jill Craig. She was speaking with me earlier today from Nairobi about Raila Odinga's decision to pull out of the rerun of Kenya's presidential election on October 26th. A coalition of 32 South Sudanese civil society organizations have petitioned the South Sudan Parliament to suspend a decision by the country's traffic police department to have motorists apply for new vehicle registration plates and driver's licenses. The activists say the decision, approved by the Council of Ministers and the Interior Ministry, is illegal and have threatened to sue the institutions for violating the national constitution. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Jame David is the executive director at the local NGO Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, or FODAC. Speaking on behalf of the Civil Society Coalition at a news conference in Juba today, David said the Traffic Police Department's decision to issue new licenses and number plates undermines the transitional constitution of South Sudan.
We, the civil society, on behalf of the public, are aggrieved by the conduct and the manner of implementation of the order, including and not limited to limited public information on the order, exorbitant penalties and charges for permit and cancellation of valid driving license. We are filing this petition under Section B 37 on the powers of the states. The petitioners challenge the legality of the motor vehicle licensing, the conduct of the unified motor vehicles number plates, and the process of implementation. We are also looking into the legality of unifying the number plates under the national government.
In the past, South Sudanese states used to issue driving licenses and car registration number plates bearing the initials of states' names. But in February 2016, the National Council of Ministers issued a ministerial resolution approving the unification of national traffic services in South Sudan. And this past July, the National Interior Minister issued a ministerial order which allowed traffic police to implement the resolution. The ministerial order cancels all number plates produced by states and nationalizes all driving licenses and car number plates to the national government with the initials SSD. The Civil Society Coalition says all of these moves are illegal, noting there is no law that supports either the cabinet resolution or the ministerial order. David says the decision by the two institutions undermines the decentralized democratic framework of governance.
Now, if by any chance we wait too long for the assembly not to act, we will have no option but ask for injunction from the courts. However, that is the last resort.
David says the coalition hopes the Transitional Assembly responds to its petition before that becomes necessary. Rajab Mohandis, Executive Director of the South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, or SUNDE, says the decision harms ordinary citizens across the country who are being forced to change their driver's licenses and number plates regardless of expiration dates at a cost of around $50.
The level of harassment on drivers and motorists along the road. People are stopped, driving licenses are confiscated, and people are forced to pay money and without receipts. Sometimes you pay and the receipt given to you does not correspond with the amount of money that you pay. And so this poses lots of challenges and disappoints people, the citizens, ordinary citizens on the road.
Speaking in Arabic, a driver in Juba, who prefers to be identified only as Isaac for fear of reprisals from traffic police officials, says he often gets harassed by police while doing his work.
When you are driving along the road, the traffic officers stop you. They first ask your logbook and they will say they no longer want the number plate RSS. They want the new number plate SSD. Sometimes they ask for your driving license, and you know many of our driving licenses have not yet expired. Mine expires up to 2018, but they still say it no longer works.
Another driver who prefers to be identified only as Clement says he too has been harassed.
If you don't acquire the driving license of the SSD, you are in trouble.
In July, the Jobek State Parliament challenged the national government's decision to unify driving licenses and vehicle registration number plates, and Jobek lawmakers decided the state would launch Jobek State vehicle registration number plates. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Lawmakers and politicians in Yei River State say good governance and the respect of human rights are important for the success of President Salva Kiir's national dialogue. The leaders held a grassroots national dialogue consultative meeting Monday, chaired by Clement Wani Konga, the former governor of what was then Central Equatoria State. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Yei Town.
Lawmakers discussed reforms within the security sector, the poor system of governance in the country, and the lack of law and order, including human rights violations. Joyce Esther, a member of parliament representing Lanya County, says the composition of the South Sudan Army is mostly tribal, leading to the worsening security situation across the country. Esther says most promotions of army officers are carried out along tribal lines. Esther says if the national government wants to restore peace, it must unify the army and motivate soldiers by promoting soldiers based on merits.
The military are divided into tribal military. Most of our Equatorians are sent out that they have no unit. How could you stay in the army for over 20 years or 30 years without promotion? But you are seeing the rest are promoted. And if you see the list, chol chol nga, at the end of the day, Wani will be there, one among the rest.
MP Daniel Lokoroto represents Lasupayam in the state assembly. Lokoroto blames senior military officials for land grabbing from poor residents in Yei River State.
Land in Central Equatoria belongs to the people of Central Equatoria, and its usage shall be regulated by law. As I talk now in Yei, there are people's land that are being grabbed by force. Others are government lands are grabbed by force, and people refuse to give. Is the land of Central Equatoria State belonging to South Sudan?
MP Jennifer Yabu, who represents Yei County, says her constituency has witnessed a wide range of human rights abuses. Yabu accused both warring parties of gruesome human rights violations, adding that the expelling practice of taking control of towns and services has morphed into human rights displacements of tens of thousands of citizens.
People are looked into after their gardens. Your cassava is taken. The reason of the expelling was taking the towns to the people, but it has changed in instead taking wars to the people. People have been killed after the grassroots. Is this the SPLM where our people voted for? And today we say we are government, and even here within Yei State, people are staying without their families. Shame on us.
Yabu says the national dialogue should address the issue of good governance. And she says SPLM parties should be separated from the SPLA. Emmanuel Adel, a member of the Legislative Council, criticized informal institutions affecting national issues. Adel says the national government should address the issues of tribal community organizations exacerbating South Sudan's political, economic, and humanitarian crisis.
We have actually moved away from our political organization to our community organization to champion national agenda. You want to discuss something, you group yourself at the Gen Council, Nweri Elders, or Equatoria, and so on and so on. Now, what is the use of these political organizations? That you are supposed to champion your own agenda, because this is where you discuss national policies and issues. So this community organization actually, in my view, are the cause of the deviation of the SPLM vision and mission.
The executive office of the state government is demanding the inclusion of women into the top leadership of the country. Joy KG says many of the country's political leaders are corrupt and are responsible for the ongoing crisis in South Sudan.
Our women have never been given even one seat to contest even a vice president or to be given as a governor. That's why we have problems. Women are good. They cannot marginalize. They can give everything equally. But we are not given that opportunity for women to lead.
KG accuses men in high office of embezzling money for their own interest. Deputy Ye River State Governor Agustino Kiri says reforms in the army, including forced retirement of many generals, is necessary for peace to prevail in South Sudan.
Nobody, only a mad dog, can eat its own tail. If you are dependent on the government as a soldier, where do you loot your own government? What I know is that the army all over the world should be subordinate to the executive. But now the army is superior to the executive.
Clement Wanikonga is President Salva Kiir's advisor and head of National Dialogue Committee for Central Equatoria. Konga asked Ye residents to express their concerns over what they see as the issues hindering the unity, peace and stability of South Sudan.
What is needed, all the stakeholders, including the citizens, and you are free to talk freely. Nobody will arrest you. Say the truth so that the Republic of South Sudan can stand on its own feet. Nobody is to threaten you.
He says the views of Ye residents will be documented and presented at a regional national dialogue conference to be held later in Juba. Konga says the National Dialogue Committee will convene similar meetings in Ye, Morobo, and Lanya counties. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Ye.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. South Sudanese refugees in Uganda have their food rations cut once again. Find out about the World Food Program's temporary solution when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you wrote a story of your life, how would it begin?
This is my story. Through my life, I've been through ups and downs.
I will begin from my childhood, how I was a child, and then how I progressed to become an adult, and especially during my school times. There are so many things I can recall.
I think I would begin with the words like, God is good, because I've achieved in life, because God made me to achieve.
Humble. My beginning has been humble, and to be where I am today is just a grace of God.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's Tuesday, so that means it's time for our health segment. And today we're talking about a new way to learn the exact whereabouts of cancer in the body. Surgery plays a major role in diagnosing cancer and finding out how far it may have spread. But soon, instead of waiting for the lab results, surgeons could learn exactly where a tumor is located almost immediately during surgery, using a device shaped like a pen. VOA's Deborah Block has the details.
The device called the mass spec pen discovers cancer within just 10 seconds. Still in the testing stage in the laboratory, the pen can tell the difference between healthy and cancerous tissues with 96% accuracy, according to researchers at the University of Texas at Austin.
A mass spec pen is a non-destructive handheld device which can be used to real-time diagnosis of human tissue to help the doctor to do the margin analysis.
After a cancerous tumor has been removed from the body, the disposable plastic tip of the pen is placed on the tissue, and a foot pedal releases a droplet of water.
We have some tubing that deliver a control water droplet to the tip of the pen, and then this water droplet is delivered into the mass spectrometer with the different tubing that we have, and then this information can be analyzed.
After a quick automated analysis, normal or cancer appears on the computer screen just a few seconds later. That quick diagnosis from the edges of the tumor can help tell surgeons more precisely if they've removed all the cancerous cells. The molecules collected by the droplet form a set of biomarkers unique to different types of cancer. The instrument compares those molecular fingerprints to hundreds of samples of normal and cancerous tissues.
What we have now can take anywhere between 30 minutes to 2 weeks. And with the mass spec pen, we can get information in about 10 seconds. So it's quite an improvement.
The team is working to secure worldwide patents for the technology that could help save millions of lives. Deborah Block, VOA News.
South Sudanese refugees protesting the reduction of their food rations by half this month, saying the decision by the World Food Program is forcing them to adopt difficult coping plans. But a World Food Program official says the measure was triggered by a delay in the delivery of food supplies and is only temporary. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
The World Food Program says it had no option but to cut in half the monthly ration of 12 kilograms of cereals for refugees in Uganda's West Nile region. The UN Food Agency says to minimize the impact of the food cut, WFP is giving cash to refugees so that they can buy their own cereals from nearby markets. South Sudanese refugees at the Agodzo camp in Adjumani district, like Jane Keji, a mother of four, says the cut hurts families, particularly children and lactating mothers. Keji says buying cereals in the market is not as easy as it sounds because of the scarcity of food supplies.
Since they cannot get for us food and they have given for us cash, where do they expect us to get the food? Yet they cannot get us.
Sam Manduga, a father of seven and a leader of one of the blocks in the Agodzo camp, says most families in the settlement have run out of food.
The food which is we have received, 6 kilo, it has taken now 2 weeks ago. Now when you reach in each family house, you will not get food automatically.
The WFP says because it had enough cash on hand, it decided in conjunction with its partners that it would be best to provide refugees with half the normal ration of cereals and 7,000 Ugandan shillings to each refugee to buy what they need from the market. South Sudanese refugee Muroga Abraham says he likes the idea of receiving cash but argues that transportation costs to and from the market cuts down on the amount he can spend on food.
You go a distance to look for the food. As a result, from Agodzo, I went up to Siforo to look for food. I could not get. Then from Siforo, I tried to travel up to Adjumani, Awintiri, to get the food there. And then I bought the food there. The transport cost is also on me.
Keji says mothers like her are forced to either cut the number of meals they eat per day or reduce the quantity of food consumed, something she says is taking a toll on the health of refugees.
When you used to eat a quantity of it, you have to reduce. So people used to take like that, but you can see the body immunity of the people is reduced. The growth of children will also reduce.
The UN Food Agency's country director, Al-Khidr Dalloum, says WFP is facing delays in funding and other UN bureaucratic problems.
Whenever the funding delay, and especially if it's dependent on regional recruitment or international recruitment, it means the time of the recruitment to the delivery is going to be delayed. And that will affect the physical amount of food to be provided for the refugees.
Dalloum praised the continued generosity of donors, whom he says are the same donors supporting many other emergencies around the world. and he admits the South Sudanese refugee crisis is overwhelming, noting the influx of South Sudanese refugees into Uganda has been continuous since the conflict erupted in December 2013.
This is very unique. I have never seen in my 27 years of professional life working in humanitarian situation, I have never seen a refugee that continue over one year. Normally, between 3 to 6 months, you reach a stabilization point. And we had never reached that stabilization point.
Dalum says refugees affected by the latest cut in rations will receive their full quarter next month.
It is a temporary measure. We are not going to do it unless we have been is a last resort. We will continue, and everyone to move to cash has to be a choice, has to be voluntary. No one will be forced to move to cash.
The WFP now offers refugees the option to choose between receiving food or cash. If refugees prefer direct food assistance instead of cash, that's what they'll get, according to Dalum. The WFP country director says his office still needs an additional $62 million to continue providing assistance to over 1 million refugees in the next 6 months. Dalum is appealing to who he calls non-traditional donors such as South Korea, China, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates to help WFP feed the millions of South Sudanese refugees who continue to escape ongoing violence in their country. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Sitting in Limbo by Jimmy Cliff.
Sitting here in limbo, but I know it won't be long. Sitting here in limbo, like a bird without a song. To roll, sitting here in limbo, got some time to search my soul. Well, they're putting up resistance, but I know that my faith will lead me on. I don't know.
This little boy is moving on. We've been listening to Jimmy Cliff with the song Sitting in Limbo. I'm Ann Bior in Washington. We're glad you could join us. We want to hear your comments about the show. Drop us a line on the web at southsudan@voanews.com. Or you can find us on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.